Hi, my name is Dave Reske, CEO of NowSpeed Marketing, and welcome to this edition of In the Now, where we focus on uncovering the myths and misunderstandings of marketing and leadership with some of the world's most interesting people. And my guest today is Paul Marston. Paul is a CEO coach with C12, and he's also been president of several family businesses in industries as diverse as a restaurant, a golf course, hazmat trucking, self-storage, and even healthy vending machines. So hopefully you didn't do all of that at the same time, Paul, but it sounds exciting.
Well, I did actually do some of them in conjunction, for sure.
Well, all that experience, we'll have a lot to talk about. Well, welcome to the show. Thanks for taking the time to be here.
Well, thank you, David. I really appreciate it. This is a great opportunity.
Yeah, so it sounds like you've had some amazing experiences, and now you're working on equipping CEOs with C12. Before we get into our conversation, think about all those experiences as president of those businesses. What was your favorite business of all of that?
Ooh, favorite business.
It's like having a favorite child, right?
Right. Every one of them had their blessings, right? At different times, and the highs were high and the lows were low. I think I learned the most. I was in trucking for the longest. Yeah, so that was, I did that for 30 years. And then everything else kind of was in and out of that. I also sold used cars too in college. Wow. So I would have to say that the trucking, it was the backbone of all. And it was certainly the most, I learned a lot because it had a lot of opportunities for learning.
I'm sure, yeah. I'm sure we get a lot of stories with that. Well, we like to start these conversations with what I call a MythBuster question. And the question you and I have been talking about is from a CEO's perspective, the myth is, if I just put in enough hours, it will all work out. True or not true?
Oh my gosh, so not true, right? It's, trial and error should be the means of last resort. It is certainly you can't discount it at times. However, it's like going to if you're a golfer, right? And people love to take up golf and they go to the driving range, they get a big bucket of balls and they just keep hitting and they keep hitting and they keep hitting, but they don't get any instruction, right? They don't get any wisdom from other people. There's millions of people. And the person, next to them, the golf instructor can see, whether the grip is backwards or whatever obvious thing. But they keep hitting and hitting and hitting, and eventually they hit a few good shots and they get kind of lucky and they think, oh, I've got this mastered. But they're so, when we go and seek that better alternative, have mentors, coaches, read books, just talk to other people, but we get it in here, and that we just try harder. If I just try harder, I can move that big rock faster and, without, somebody already invented a lever. Maybe I should try that.
Yeah, that really strikes a chord with me. A little known fact, in college, actually, I learned to play the guitar, and I thought I was pretty good, and I was, playing with college friends, and it was a blast. But I really never got any better, and I think it's exactly what you were talking about. I never got any instruction, never took the time to kind of learn from other people. And I realize now that I only knew like 6 chords, and it got me really far. At least as I thought, but it was, I just never got any farther. So, in America, I think this is maybe an American myth. We have this myth of the CEO who kind of comes in, figures it all out, is the hero and puts it all together. Is that whole myth just not really true? Do we need to learn as much as everybody needs to learn from others? Or can CEOs, the heroes, figure it out themselves?
Well, first of all, I do want to say that mastery of a guitar, once you know the right things to do, will require a ton of work. I think that's different than I think if you're desiring to be masterful I think that being a CEO involves wearing multiple hats. And certainly the bigger that you get, let's assume it's not a total startup, right? But there's the visionary of a company. There's the entrepreneurial aspect. But somebody once described, my dad was a great entrepreneur. But somebody once described to me entrepreneurship as a spark. That is the spark of the fire. So once you come up with the idea and you come up with the business deal that gets it going, That's wonderful. And that takes a huge skill set to do that. And I think Patrick Lencioni's Six Working Genius would kind of speak to that person that can, that does that. But that's a spark. That's an event. Creating and running the business, having vision for the future of the business, that is a different skill set. And, you know, having that vision and where the business is going to go, you know, that that visionary seat is one thing. And then there's the CEO that, that that's good at getting people to work together to get to that vision. That is another like skill set. And quite often you have to wear the multiple hats when you're a smaller business because, you know, it was your idea. I do think I'll probably butcher this story, but my observation of Steve Jobs is that when he first developed Apple, you know, at first it failed, right? It was a wonderful idea. It was really great, but the company booted him out. He was probably lousy at what he was, you know, was running it. And the company had a million, you know, they put a board in, they came up with a million products and they failed without him. Then he comes back in, gets rid of all the products. He comes back in and now we are, I guess we're 12, 13 years since he's died. And that company, he didn't do it, obviously he didn't do it on his own. He did it with Tim Cook and did it with the other leaders. And he did it as part of a team. And that team has now continued to build that company a dozen years later into the most, you know, one of the largest company on the planet, right? And so that, I think that his, you know, that individuality to learning to build a team that becomes sustainable is the way healthy businesses truly grow.
Yeah.
Did I answer your question? I probably ran off.
Yeah, no, that's a great story. So what is the role of working harder? You know, it is, you know, are maximum hours required when you're the CEO, maybe when you're the entrepreneur, startup, and does it change over time? You know, should people expect to put in 80, 100 hour weeks when they're starting or when they're running or when they're growing? And is, you know, and are they thinking about, hey, when I get to be, you know, 40 years into this business, then I'll be on the golf course, then it gets easy and I can lay off. But right now I've got to like put in those 80 hours. Is it a myth that they have to put in all those hours, or is it just part of the job?
Well, I think it depends on how they've grown their company. If they are in that early stage where they're, and they've got the revenue coming in and they've got, you know, their Lucille Ball and the conveyor belt trying to do all the things, and they're not willing to give up control, and they're, which is really a, you know, people will say it's kind of a perfectionism thing. It's a huge character flaw because, and they often don't see it because they're inside the bottle and they say, well, I need to sell the product and I need to oversee the operations and I need to do all these things. And the reality is, especially the day we live in today, I have worked with a lot of small business owners and they don't watch their finances. Now they have an accountant, you know, they're smart enough to have an accountant, they pay their taxes. They wait till the end of the year, often, not all of them, several of them. And then they just look in, you know, they file late in the return, then they finally maybe open up their taxes and say, I can't believe I have to pay all this money, and they write a check. But they're not actually reviewing their financial statements on a monthly or quarterly basis. And the reality is they don't even have to learn how to do it. There's fractional CFOs out there that for a few hundred dollars, maybe $1,000 or something, will help them interpret their financial statements and make sure they're getting actually accurate financial statements and make sure the ship is on course. I was working with one small business owner. He had killed it in 2022. Made a lot of money, and he knew that because his checkbook was full, and that was his method. And well, and he said to me, well, business kind of slowed down and you've done a really good job. His wife made all the entries in the software. I said, well, let's have a look. And they used QuickBooks. I know how to use QuickBooks. I dial right in. I pull up his financial statement. I said, you're about, you know, $150,000 in cash behind a year ago, first quarter. He said, what? I said, yeah, and you're going to be out of cash in 6 months unless you change, you know, look, let's start looking. And then we start looking and pouring through it. And I kept him up on a weekend, as he told me later, but he needed to see that, right? And it took no time to see it. And did he need to go and learn to understand a P&L and balance sheet and all this stuff and put the hours in that? No, he needs to go get a fractional CFO that will go and fill that slot for him. I think that the entrepreneur's brain, turning that off when you leave your business is really hard. I think that's really hard. I think you do expect to put in some hours when you're getting your business going, because you don't know what you don't know. And that is probably the biggest, I would say that is the biggest challenge, because most entrepreneurs are young, right? And there's science to that, right? I think we're better idea generators when we're in our 20s and 30s. And then we're at the older you get, I hate to say it, but there's science behind this. We're less creative and we're more discerning. But those guys don't have the experience at that age to put the business together. And they run out in front of themselves, they get all this revenue and they think they're doing great, but yet they're actually not building a sustainable business. So the hours, do you have to put them in? You definitely have to be prepared to commit full into your business. If you do that and neglect your family, you will be paying a price that you cannot get back. Mm-hmm. If you do that and neglect your fitness, you may pay a price, depending on how bad you neglect it, you may be willing to give up everything later in your life to get that fitness back. I don't believe in a truly balanced work-life balance as if it balances perfectly, but there is your family is super important. You cannot neglect them. Now, maybe you're not able to spend, you're not home at 6 o'clock every night. And there are times, but you have to make allotment for them. You have to spend some headspace going, how can I have valuable time with my family this week? I haven't done anything in 3 weeks. I just accepted to be on a board of a club, and it's going to conflict with the awards banquet for my daughter. So I said, look, there's no chance I'm going to do that. I am going to do this for my daughter because she needs to have that. She needs to know that she's more important to me than this. Family balance, your spiritual balance. Where is God in what you're doing? Your relationship with God, your version of God, is not right. And all the hard work in the world isn't gonna produce the fruit that you really want. You're not gonna have fulfillment, because at the end of the day, you actually may have great returns, but to have a truly fulfilled life, and where you're able to give back, where you're able to give back to your family, if your health isn't there, you're not gonna be able to give back to your community. If your marriage is, the most important thing in raising kids is your marriage, is quality of your marriage. And if you're not pouring into that and finding a way to make that work, and maybe that means late night, date night, maybe that means a 90-minute coffee on Sunday after church with your wife, just talking about your marriage, it can be, with 3 or 4 really good questions, right? What went great this past week for you? What did I miss that you did this past week? Where could you have used my support this fast? And you can do that. And maybe it's just 90 minutes. And then, I only have an hour with my wife at night to talk to her on the phone. Maybe it's a half hour, but I'm going to make time to do it right. I think it's how we spend that. Who are you spending those overworked hours with? Are you mixing with people that are helping you be better? Are you mixing with other people in your field, or are you huddled in an office trying to invent something by yourself and do something all by yourself and hoping that God's going to bless you with this brilliant idea? And if I could just have more money, if I could just, and the problem is tomorrow never comes, right? And we have to have some enjoyment for today and fulfillment for today.
Yeah. You've hit on so many really important ideas here. So, because I think what you're saying is that if you're spending too many hours in your business, A, you're probably not managing it well. You're not leveraging talent properly. You're not executing as well as you could with experts who could get things done in minutes instead of weeks and months that if you tried it yourself, right? And you're also saying that the price of that is not only a less successful business than it could be, but the price of that is family, fitness, spiritual health, mental health, relationship with your kids, other things that you can't get back, in other words. So I want to get into a couple of those areas, maybe on the business side first, and I definitely want to save some time talking about the life piece. because that's so important. But on the business side, I appreciate what you're saying, because one of my philosophies in running my business is that if I'm working more than 40 hours, I've done something wrong. I've just kind of had that in the back of my mind. I have managed, I own it. I own that extra time. And I have, I've not hired the people that I need to. I've not put together the right strategy. I've not thought about it creatively enough. I haven't brought on some experts. I use that extra time if I'm working nights or weekends to remind myself that I'm making a mistake. Do you find other entrepreneurs do that, or is that kind of a unique thing to me? Or are they more, you find more the coaches, the CEOs you're working with saying, no, it's a badge of honor. I work more and I believe that that's the driver of my success. Am I unusual there, or is that how other people
think? You're totally unusual. No, not at all. Not at all.
Use the word.
I think the question that arises for me is what is your goal? You know, where are you now? And I guess if we're just talking business, I mean, where's the business now? I an incredible number of entrepreneurs don't plan. They got a great idea, but they don't have a goal. I just want to be bigger. Oh, I want to hit it big. Oh, I want to go from 500. If I could just do 1 million. Well, if I could just do 10 million, if I could just double my business, if I could, you know, one entrepreneur, you know, I was watching he presented his business and what he was doing, and he was in the mold remediation business, and he had gone from like 3 million. And I didn't know him when he was 3 million. And now he was doing 7 million. And I could see his margins, and his margins had changed. His dollar return had not. And he's talking about working more, and I just need more sales, and I just need this. And I said, whoa. How is your business change? If you double again and your business practices don't change, all you're doing is running faster on the hamster wheel. You know, where are you going? What is your goal? And what is your plan to get there? If your plan to get there is to double in sales, and you need a plan with more salespeople, are you good at hiring salespeople? Last time I checked, almost every entrepreneur I talked to is terrible at hiring salespeople, unless they were a salesperson, and that helps. But then they're probably a lousy sales manager, because that's different, right? And really seeing the weaknesses in your structure on your plan, your hours are your, if you're using hours to keep score instead of results to keep score, you're tracking the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. If you're wearing your hours like a badge of honor, then you're honoring your hours and your time in a way that is disrespectful to God, right? Like I'm going to, you know, instead of watching my weight, I'm going to watch my hour. I put in 50 hours. I put in 60 hours. That's really great. And you made $1,000 in profit. So you're making, you know, you're generating $8 an hour or something. There's not a scorecard. We don't want that. Is that we want the scorecard should be results. And how can I get those results the most efficient way that I can get them? Whose wisdom can I get? You said it way better than I said it. You know, if I try to do everything myself in the smallest amount of hours, I don't hire experts. I don't hire people who are masterful in their field. I don't get the multiplier effect of a really good salesperson. And I got 4 very good salespeople, and I hire a sales manager. And it's, you know, I would rather add a couple $100,000 in overhead so I can add a couple $1 million in sales. And I don't have any clue on how to do that, because I just came up with a widget. Why would I be a salesperson? Distribution. I've seen, you know, people who, you know, there's just so many ways to distribute products. I've seen really good products fail, and because I couldn't distribute it, and you could not over, and they wouldn't release control. You know, they had too much confidence in themselves and too little trust in other human beings. And then the product dies in the vine.
Yeah. You're making me think of so many very important ideas based on that. One podcast I listened to recently used the term elegance to describe a little bit what you're talking about. And it kind of stuck with me. It was this idea like about creating an elegant business. The idea was, create the maximum impact with the least amount of effort.
Yeah.
You know, this to kind of create an elegant business that just flows, the whole system works as a symphony does with everybody doing their part. But it's, you know, from the CEO, it's like the least amount of effort to really keep that elegant system going. And I feel like that's a little bit about what you're talking about, but it takes a unique entrepreneur to kind of go from doing the whole thing to letting go of that control to create that elegance in their business. You know, what have you seen in that around those issues around control? So is that the key thing that keeps entrepreneurs from giving up?
Oh, yes, you nailed it.
You know, yeah. And how does that work in your experience with CEOs?
The tighter they hold on to control, the less chance that that seed's going to grow, right? The tighter you hold on to people, if you manage people by giving them tasks instead of giving them, you know, hold them to results, then you're only going to get management. You're not creating any leaders. And if you don't create leaders within your company can only go as fast as you go. And really, you know, that to me was always frustrating in my businesses when I hit that. And I didn't know it for a long time. I'm like, well, you know, why do I have to answer all the questions? Well, that's because you don't give people the freedom to fail. If you would loosen up your grip and allow people to fail and tell and reward them for winning, reward them handsomely for winning, then, which was the difficult in trucking, by the way, the margins were so small. We worked so hard for such little margins, which is one of the reasons why I exited that business. It was so torturous that it was really hard to reward people for winning in that business, but really giving them the freedom to fail and you know, with boundaries, right? And then but you can't do it. Like I always knew that I didn't have a huge amount. I had 125 employees. Always knew that the battle was won by the frontline guys. The guys in the, I didn't spend the money in maintenance. It was the guy turning the wrench. He spent the money. He's the one that put on the extra part. So he's the guy that I had to go talk to and try to motivate, but really to release control over, to say, I want your information. I want your feedback. We can both win. How can we do this better? The driver who was actually making the delivery, what could we do better that we're not doing? And it's not just a one-time interview. It's setting up a system and you kind of invert the pyramid and you have true servant leadership because that's where the money is spent. You know, and so many of these companies were so removed from it. You know, I've been on a fight with Comcast Cable, you know, for like 4 days because the cable in our beach house isn't working. They have the worst customer service system. It's not the people, it's the system. And if those executives ever saw the way their own system functioned, yeah, and having, you know, maybe that's kind of a deviation of control. That's just my anger at Comcast. But the control, when we exercise too much control, we really limit the growth of a company because the growth of a company is not the IQ of the leader. It's the IQ of the company. It's the IQ of the leadership team. And the more freedom you do, and sometimes, you know, sometimes you have to give people freedom to go succeed elsewhere and they're not the right people for your company. So I don't mean that chaos rules. You know, you create boundaries. I think there's freedom in boundaries. You give people a playing field to play on and you hire great people. And you give them great incentives and you treat them well. And I think and releasing control is a real honor to them as human beings.
So if you're the entrepreneur, you've made this evolution, you've released control, you've let go some. Now you get to just hang out on the beach, and maybe play golf when you want to, right? This is like you've let go. So what's the job of the CEO at that point? I mean, hey, everybody is doing my job. I got the experts in finance, sales, marketing. Operations, it's all working. Like, man, you just sit back and collect the money. Is that what the CEO is supposed to do then?
Well, I mean, there's what's the book? Paranoid. How it's going to come to? But is your company at all? How long is your company going to be safe doing all the things that they did to get there? Hmm. If your goal is to play safe, and if you're in the hamburger business, and pick a million businesses, right? That thought they were safe, good to great. Jim Collins got a million businesses. They thought they were safe and they rest where they are. And then, you know, there's only one way to coast, right? And I think when you have that mentality, you know, maybe you get by for a little while. Maybe you get by for a lifetime. Maybe that's your thing. You want to coast right to retirement. But I think that there's, if you're not building a life that's fulfilled, then you can get back to, if you're not giving, that giving your time, talent, and treasure, if we don't get to that stage, and that's not a future thing. That starts now. If you're not pouring into your family now, if you're not pouring into your employees now, if you're not giving them opportunities, if you're not being generous with, you know, I mean, having a godly business isn't just giving money away. It's giving your time away. It's treating people really well. It's having, providing different resources. Is your, just because we're making some money, are you best in your industry? Are you teaching other people how to be best in their industry? I know a cleaning company who she's phenomenally successful. And she was seeing people. I had somebody come to me who's from her company, and I called her on the phone. I said to her, I said, you know, this doesn't sound right. She's working for you. And she says, no, I want them to go off on their own. You know, if they can go off on their own and build, I'll help them. You know, it's really hard to do. Most people don't do it. They try it and they come back because that's fulfilling. So I think, what is real fulfillment going to be? It's not going to be a bottom line in a profit and loss. It's not going to be your self-worth cannot be, or your net worth cannot be your self-worth, right? And that is a very, very shallow thing. Now, you may have a business and you may have great people and it's growing and doing great, and you don't have to do a lot to it, and it keeps going. And that's, you know, half of 1% of people, right? And then go find something else. Highly encourage. And that's a frustrating, you know, you've got to find, and you got to really challenge yourself. Who am I going to spend time with? Iron sharpens iron. I've got to find people that are going to continue to challenge me. I know somebody that is in that position in the fitness space. They killed it. Their business continues to kill it. And they're, this person is mid-50s and he is wandering around. And there is a, he's not a client. I'd love him to be a client. And it's frustrating to watch from the outside. And I think you've got to stay close to God and find out what God's purpose for your life is, right? If you've been that successful in that short period of time, and you got another 50, you know, we could have another 6 minutes on the planet. We could have another next 60 years on this planet. How are you going to make truly a fulfilling impact?
And I think that's the other side of this, spending extreme amounts of time on your business, is you give up all of that other impact, whether it's your family, your life, giving to people, making a difference, finding your life's purpose. How do you help CEOs that you work with think deeply about that side of their life? Or is it, or are they thinking about that side of their life? Can they kind of get out of that running the business? And it's not really about the money for most CEOs, about making a difference, making an impact, which I totally believe in. But are they thinking about like the holistic life, and how do they kind of get out of that?
We take it back that, you know, you've got to have some balance in your life. And if you cannot make anything, you can't even make religion your God. You know, there's only one God. And when we start to make fitness our God, when we start to make our job our God, when we start to do that and we devalue our relationship with the real God, now all of a sudden that's an empty, there is no finish line to that. There's never enough. Enough is a mythical place. Talk about mythology. Mythology is the land of enough, right? There is no enough. It will never be enough. You know, it's learning to have contentment now, and you know, getting that, you know, how, tell me that there's not a CEO on this planet that didn't succeed because of some supernatural being gave them a gift of the idea, a gift of what to do next. There's so much karma that's involved in successful business, you know, and we know that God, you know, it has a play in all this, right? That there's a, it's not just our brilliant idea. You know, it's not just us that happen to be at the right place, the right time, having lunch with the right person. And having that clear, if you're not well-rested, game over. Ready to make the worst decisions of your life? Make them at 4 o'clock in the afternoon after you've been up all day and a bunch of stress. It does not work. You can make a decision because you're a CEO. I get it. I can make them too, but they're lousy decisions. And half the time you didn't have to make it. If you were smart enough to put it off the day or to tell somebody, I think that's a great idea, let me think on it. Or, you know, you didn't even have to do it, but you were short tempered and you said, yeah, just do it. Just buy that or just sell that or just do that. But we don't give ourselves, when you have fitness on your side, and you're well rested, and you have people pouring into you wisdom going, oh, by the way, I've been doing this. I got a company twice your size and a family that's, you know, I'm running on most of my cylinders, and I do most of my decision-making before 10 o'clock in the morning. I try to work my day around and I do this, and you go, oh, that's a great idea. you know, or I, another you know, I had a CEO, that younger CEO, that was struggling with his kids, and a couple other, they were just struggling because they weren't doing anything wrong. They were just trying to raise kids in a busy environment, right? And they were good parents. And but they were saying, well, how, you have mid-20s, mid-30-year-old kids, and they're great, and they're strong Christians, and they're beautiful families, and they've launched really well. What's the secret? What's the secret? And people went back and forth with some ideas, but then one guy said, you know, and he had the most, what success, right? But he had a very happy family, and he said, real big time CEO, and he said, I'm not very good at most things, but I'll tell you what, I love their mother ridiculously. And then the other guy said, that's it. So I don't know why it works, but I'll tell you, loving their mother was everything. Now, how do you do that when you're not well-rested? How do you do that when you don't make time for them? And I get it, when business is lousy and you don't have any money, if your identity is in that bottom line of that business and you bring that identity home and you don't make, and your identity is not, God, I am so lucky to be married to this woman because I'm a lousy businessman today. It's just not working. It's going to work. I know it's going to work. It's going to work. I need to love my wife so that everything else is going to work with my family. So that my, you know, I got to take care of my fitness, Lord. So I have the energy to go attack this tomorrow morning so I can attack it smartly. So how can I use wisdom on my side? Who do I need to talk to get smarter at this? Because this is not working. When I first started in trucking, you know, my dad was brilliant. He did a lot of really good things. But what he didn't do particularly well was when he hired his accountant, when he hired his insurance agent, when he hired his lawyers, he hired people. He was a very strong person, and he hired people that he could control to some degree. And that created chaos because we didn't have good accounting. We didn't have good legal representation. We had lousy insurance. We admitted it was cheap. It didn't cover what you needed. And so when I came in, I had to, we changed those. I didn't know that was the problem when I did it. But over time, I came back to realize when we finally upgraded our accounting and I spent way more than we ever spent before, it saved literally millions of dollars over my life because of the having wise counsel, right? But I had to have other people tell me, you need to hire this good guy. You need to fail at in court. At some really bad court cases, knowing that you have lousy representation, to realize you got to get better lawyers. And you know, nobody wants to fail and have that learning, but you need those things. And that was, I learned to get wise counsel. I tried to always improve. I still do. I still work on that. Still got to try to get great coaches. That's a problem. You know, that's an ongoing process.
Yeah. You know, that it reminds me of the cliche, work smarter, not harder. And that is a cliche, but if I just unpack that, you've been saying that through this entire conversation. There's so many ways, and that's, I think, the difficulty of the CEO job, is that there's so many ways to work smarter. It's hiring better employees, better counsel, better thinking about different strategy. And if you just think about it in hours, and like you said, think about that's the scorecard, you're not only messing up in the business, then you're going to mess up in the rest of your life, which is going to make your business harder. It all goes downhill. So
working, yeah, slow down to go faster. I'll tell you, you know, it's a brilliant book. Am I allowed to say, make book recommendations?
Sure, absolutely.
This is not a Christian book or anything. And it'll probably come out backwards and it'll come out forward. You ever read Road Less Stupid?
I'm reading it right now. That's a great book. Yes.
And Keith is unbelievable. He's getting older now. If you ever want to, he's just awesome. There's so much wisdom in this book. Just about thinking, right? Slow down, start to think. You know, if, you know, some days I would wake up and say, all right, you're really lousy at the CEO of this. If you were to wake up and Bill Gates were to have your job, what would he do?
Yeah.
You know, he'd fire that guy. He would, I don't know, you know, he'd get that IT fit. Whatever it is, you know, we can all imagine that, right? We all have mentors. We all have people that would say, well, you know, what would happen if David Reske had my marketing? What would he do?
Yeah. Well, I love that book, and I'm glad you brought that up. The line that keeps going through my head is, stop and think, you'll thank me later.